do.
Well, you got a love Femme Fatale magazine, just because all those women you used to see back in the movies of our youth. Julie Strain is all over these magazines, too. What was it saying she used to have? 6 foot and worth the climb, I think it was.
I believe it.
Oh, there's some Carrie Fisher, some slave girl Leia. Yeah. This article is the 50 sexiest figures in science fiction. I'm going to throw this list up on the site and see if everybody agrees with this top 50.
Hey, you can disagree with an old magazine. You know. So, how you been, Scotty?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Just staying busy as usual.
Well, we're cutting in here to number episode 15.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe it's already been 15 episodes.
I know, man.
Just seemed like we just started doing this little project. Since it's episode 15, I think, you know, we counted episode 5 was our first ghost stories.
Yes.
I'm not positive, but...
Somewhere around there.
I can figure that out real quick. Oh, shit, I guess I can't. Wrong notebook. But, yeah, I think it was episode 5. Anyway, so we're going to talk about some more ghost stories. You said you had a few, and I did a little research. There's been some places that I've been to, you know, where some, mm-hmm. some stuff occurred. So yeah, let's get it going. Welcome to the Scary Dad Podcast, episode 15, Ghost Stories, part 2. I'm not going to put part 2, because we're going to talk about ghost stories quite a bit in this thing.
Yes, ghost stories are always fun.
So let's get right... You know, let's get right to the history segment here and talk about what happened on this date. This is January 23rd, 2017. What happened on January 23rd in history? Well, in 1570, James Stewart is the first person to be assassinated by firearm. So through all of human history, there weren't firearms. And then there were firearms, and you weren't the first person to be killed by one, but you were the first public official to be assassinated by one. So congratulations, Mr. Stewart. That was one accomplishment.
To that, we salute you.
Here's something a little bit more in line with our normal, with our actual story that we're talking about tonight. 1897. Miss Elva Zona Hester was found dead in Greenbrier County, West Virginia. The resulting murder trial of her husband is perhaps the only case in U.S. history where the alleged testimony of a ghost helped secure a conviction.
Really?
Yeah, so actually, whenever I saw this, of course, I had to dig a little deeper, so I looked up the story, and it's totally true. So basically, what occurred was... Elva Zona Hester, she met and married her husband, and they moved into this town, and he worked as a blacksmith. And she was found at the bottom of some stairs, dead. And by a little, like a boy, who was like a porter, or like mm-hmm. a messenger. He went to the house, he found her dead, he ran off to tell his mom. By the time the doctor got to the house, the husband had already cleaned and dressed her, and was holding her, and mourning the death. And so as the guy was kind of agitated, like, you know, they use words that right now would immediately bring the police, but he was agitated and inconsolable, and so the doctor never quite did an examination on the body. But it was all thought to be an accident. She was pregnant, she fainted, she fell down the stairs, she died. Mm-hmm. So something happened, but they never quite checked what. So they buried her, case closed. It's over. Then the mother started being visited by her daughter's ghost. Elva started visiting her own mother and telling her that she had been murdered. So the mother went to the authorities and demanded that the body be exhumed. And I didn't write down, nor do I remember all of the details, but it was a pretty serious legal complication because it was pretty much case closed.
Right.
But they finally did it. They exhumed the body, and when they did, kind of the same stuff that causes people, like exhumed people, to be perceived as vampires, her neck was broken, her windpipe was crushed, and she had choke marks and handprints on her body.
Natural causes.
The quick burial, the quick turnaround had hidden it. The bruises didn't show up because she was dead, but they showed up after death. Right. So anyway, the husband was tried, convicted, and I believe hung for the murder. But yeah, the mother, and that was another thing, was she had to prove, like, not prove, but she had to, like, go under all kinds of crazy scrutiny and say, no, I didn't dream it. It wasn't a dream. It's not a hunch. Her ghost visited me and told me
right.
that she had been murdered.
That's pretty crazy, man.
So, yeah, 1897 on this date.
Justice was served.
This is when she was, today's the day she died. Notable births, this date in 1944, the world accepted Rutger Hauer from The Hitcher and so many other wonderful movies.
Blind Fury being one of my favorites.
Blind Fury, Blade Runner.
You know, a cousin of mine posed a question on Facebook the other day. What was the first movie you remember seeing at a theater? Blade Runner is actually the first one I remember distinctively waiting in line for my ticket and everything and seeing it in the theater.
Empire Strikes Back.
Cool.
I was 2 years old when it came out. And I remember flashing lights, and I remember not really understanding the words, but I remember the... of Darth Vader.
You don't remember how much the ticket was, do you?
No.
I remember mine was 75 cents for Blade Runner.
Wow.
Yep. I'm old.
I'm getting there. So, this date, January 23rd, notable deaths. In 1803, the world lost Arthur Guinness, the owner of the Guinness Brewery, the one who started it all.
Okay.
It was a really shitty year for art, too. Because in 1883, we lost Gustave Doré. In 1944, Edvard Munch. And in 1989, Salvador Dali. And then in 2005, on this date, we lost Johnny Carson. He wasn't an artist, and he wasn't scary, but...
He was an artist when he came to comedy. He did a lot of work across.
I can tie Johnny Carson back in with getting scared. So, like, when I was a kid, my parents used to send me to bed... And they would watch the news. They'd send me to bed at like 10. So I'd go to bed. They'd watch the news. After the news, Johnny Carson came on. And after Johnny Carson, MASH came on. And if I was still awake when I heard those tones that the Suicide is Painless, that theme song from MASH, that's when my parents would turn off the lights and go to bed. That meant I was on my own. I was alone. There was no more... No place you could run if the scary guy, if the ghost came out. So, those nights, kind of like last night, man, I could not sleep. I just laid in bed, nothing on my mind, got no issues, no nothing, did a little show prep, took a big yawn, was like, time to go to bed, laid down in my eyes just popped wide open, just like, bang, and I...
Alert.
Couldn't... The bitch of it all was every time I'd start to doze... I'd catch myself and wake up. Damn it, why do I keep doing this? So I didn't sleep much last night. I think the last time I looked at the clock was like around 1:30.
Oh, wow.
So I had to work with my boss all day today, which is not a bad thing. It's kind of, I work unsupervised, so I don't see many people that I work with very often. So right. I work with a boss that's someone to talk to.
Yeah.
So, but, if that insomnia kicked and I started hearing the end of Johnny Carson, I got scared. It's not good.
I actually watched it was a roast of Johnny Carson from the early 70s a couple weeks ago. It was funny as hell, man. It was a really, really good show. It was actually, what's his name? The guy that Elvis premiered on his program, Ed Sullivan. Ed Sullivan was one of the roasters on there, which I thought was pretty cool, man. It was funny. It has good jokes. Definitely. And the other guy, remember Cat's Eye? Stephen King's Cat's Eye? Where the three stories, the cat is involved in each one. There's the one where the mob is helping people to quit cigarettes and everything. The guy that started the mob is the boss of that business. He was one of the roasters in there, too. And he was really funny, man. He was good.
I'll have to check that out. I like watching those old vintage TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
There's on off a... The off-air antenna, there's a couple, like the game show channel.
That's where I saw it on.
Is that what you saw it on? Dude, I don't know what it is. I mean, I do drink beer and whiskey, but, there's something about just kicking back and watching some of these old
Mets game
shows. Game
78 is incredible.
You know, man. Watching like Let's Make a Deal, and they get all excited about, you know, this old brown furniture or like a console TV, and it's like actually, because you and I collect vintage stuff, we like old stuff. Like,
that's cool stuff. Yeah,
that's cool stuff. You know,
except when you see the Chevy Chevette given away, you're wondering, you don't know what you're getting right there, do you? You're getting a lot of auto repair bills for
right.
this car. But Mets Game 78 is so funny because apparently it was the well, it's Mets Game, but they had one 78, 77. It was followed by the year. It was supposed to be set up as a bunch of stars just hanging out. You know, in the early days, they would smoke cigarettes and just make off-color jokes and everything. And it's hilarious, bro. There's some racism in it. You know, there's just some really, really off-color humor as far as a lot of sexual innuendo. And it's, you know, it's Richard Dawson's in it. That's before Family Feud and everything. He was a pimp, dude. Straight up. He used to host the Playboy mansion parties and shit on TV. That guy was a trip, man.
Oh yeah. Well, that's what's funny is, you know, it's like we in modern comedy and stuff. And I think there's with our political climate, I think there's going to be a major backlash against it. Like everybody talks about political correctness, and you know the people who they're like, I'm tired of political correctness, and they're like, oh, well, that just makes you racist. And it's like, I don't think so. I think it's people being afraid to say literally anything at all at any time to anyone without somebody being offended on someone else's behalf.
Right.
You know, if you got two guys sitting around, one of them's white, one of them's black, and they're both making jokes at each other, it's not your job as a third person to be offended on either one of their behalf. Like, just shut up. And if a comedian starts telling jokes and stuff, and there's off-color humor or sexuality, you know, there's kind of a backlash against that whole...
Right.
It's not even a matter of being, like sensitive or aware or even nice. It's just a matter of being human.
Right.
I mean, we joke about our differences, and that's what makes things funny.
Well, the thing about it is, I tell people all the time, anything can be funny. There is not a topic that someone somewhere will not find funny. And it's just the way it is. You
exactly.
know?
Exactly.
Everything's funny. You can find humor in very dark things. It's just the way it is.
Well, and the best comedians always have.
Yeah.
And I think what's happened is it's gone so far to one end that, you know, they've... A lot of our comedians, people like George Carlin and, you know, Rodney Dangerfield even, I mean... They exposed some of that like underbelly of society, and they woke up people to the existence of, you know, bias and, you know, latent racism and, you know, how stupid it was to be homophobic and all that stuff. But then it's gone such an other direction where if you find humor in
anything
people, in anything, then instead of laughing with you, you're laughing at them, and it's You should feel bad about that, and it like no, you gotta keep free speech open.
Yes.
You gotta keep ideas exchanging and those sorts of things.
You know, there's a YouTube video on that subject of Patrice O'Neill going against a feminist about because his shows are rough. They're hilarious. I love Patrice O'Neill. You know, R.I.P. Rest in peace. But he was incredibly off color. And him and this feminist, he ripped her apart.
Oh yeah.
You know, he actually said, "Have you ever even seen my show?" And all she had done was she had read about some of the lines that he said. And
just protesting and like,
oh,
like
yeah. She was just going all out against him. He tore her up. He actually went through and explained what each of the things in his act meant. And he told her, anything can be funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody can make a rape joke and somebody's going to find it funny. You know, you might not, but we can say it if we want. It's okay
to make jokes about anything. That's the point of, like, if I'm offended, then it's my prerogative to get up and leave.
Yes.
To walk out and be like, I don't like that guy. Because there's a lot of... I'm not offended by much, you know. But there is a lot of stuff I don't like. One of those things I don't like is the modern country rock station that plays what sounds like banjo rap. Like, It burns brain cells just by being on. Its existence insults me. Yeah, I don't waste any energy hating it. I just don't turn it on.
Most radio stations, yeah.
You know, like, I just kind of like, whatever. You know, I listen to podcasts and heavy metal, you know. And
right.
Other people love it. And more power to you.
Yeah.
It's great. But yeah, those old those old game shows and comedy things, routines and stuff. You know, like even just something as kooky as Night Court that started coming out on one of the, and you see like, I mean, they all smoked. It was dirty New York. It was before Giuliani cleaned it up.
Right. You know? Yeah. It was when Getz was out there shooting people in the subway and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a different time.
And
sure.
You know, you see all the graffiti and all the stuff in like the opening scenes and stuff.
Yeah.
And just kind of how messed up New York was back in the 70s and 80s and you know, now you go down to Times Square and instead of like porn, there's like Subway and Chipotle and stuff. It's all like they turned into an amusement park.
Yeah.
And we were talking about New Orleans in the last place. And, you know, New Orleans does have some menace. There are some dark corners.
Yeah, you don't want to go too far away from Bourbon Street. You want to two blocks this way and you're going to be in a bind.
But in some of these, I think some of these are like cultural hubs that you kind of want to, for better or worse, I would kind of want to just leave alone.
Yeah.
You know, because you clean, as bad as it sounds, you kind of clean up a ghetto in one area, just move somewhere else.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, that's one thing about New Orleans is that the tourist spots and the bad parts of town are on top of each other.
Right.
Because everything is within the bowl of the levee system. And they're very close. And you know, New Orleans is a place you got to be careful.
Oh, for sure.
You get rolled in a heartbeat. And there are plenty of guys out there that love to take advantage of tourists. You know, you'll walk down the street and you'll hear somebody. Funniest ever has, I'm walking down the street and there's a guy just, every once in a while he lets out cocaine and then he'll look around. He's just looking for somebody to sell to. That was right on Bourbon Street. Mm-hmm. that's everywhere around New Orleans, man. Excuse me.
But, yeah, I love those old shows. I like to see how everything was before everybody went and got themselves all stuffy.
Well, All in the Family would never air today. There is
so
no way it could come on television today.
Well, look at Seinfeld. Seinfeld was completely G-rated as far as like what language they used, but the innuendos,
yeah,
were and you remember at the end they got busted for being horrible people.
Yeah,
and it's like
Good Samaritan law.
Well, Good Samaritan law, but they made fun of everybody. There was nothing that was off limits, but they made fun of them in a non-threatening way. But you know. You can get a fan. I mean, hate to go run down this road, but they made fun. Like, they're all Jewish, but they make fun of Jews a lot
in
the show.
Yeah, you know? Like, the whole Schindler's List episode.
The whole culture is just up for grabs with that, with Seinfeld. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not Jewish, so, but I found it funny, you know, but.
Comedy Central is the only station that really, you know, stays to that. We don't care. We're going to offend everybody with the roast that they have, and also with South Park. I mean, South Park is one of those last shows that they're out.
I love
everybody.
Those guys.
No, nobody's off limits with them.
I love those.
Oh, Matt and Trey are incredible, man. They. I watched basketball last week. I love the stuff they do.
They're idols. As far as just they're malicious. But they're equal opportunity, like,
and they're funny.
Well, they're really good at what they do. But they're like, let's make fun of these people, and then these other people are like, yeah, those people suck. And they're like,
you too.
You're next up on the list. You're next episode. You know, so.
Oh, they'll get them in the same episode, man. There was the one where they were going against the anti-war people and the war people in the same episode, and just both sides were made to look like total fools, man. You know, that's the way they do it.
Oh yeah. Good stuff.
Yes.
Speaking of Comedy Central, it was on Netflix, and I'm recommending this to you right now. Joe Rogan has a comedy special.
Joe Rogan's awesome. I've been listening to him for a long time.
He's got a comedy special on Netflix right now.
Yeah, I did see it pop up.
Okay. Have you watched it yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, wife and I watched it the other night, and I've seen him live like two or three times.
Remember Spellbinders? He used to play over there.
Yeah. We saw him. I've seen him in several different places, but. He's phenomenal live, and he's kind of like that, where he'll say stuff that you agree with, and he'll turn around and start ripping into something that you maybe like insults your sensibilities a little bit, but then he just nails it, and you're like, dude, I don't care if I disagree with him. That's hilarious. You know what I mean?
He's a great comedian, man. A lot of people don't realize it. You know, isn't the guy from Fear Factory? Yeah, he's a stand-up comic, too. But he started off as a stand-up
And he's also a professional fighter.
Yeah, and everybody always ties him to UFC. I'm like, you know, he did stand-up before he ever did any of that stuff.
Yeah.
He's been funny for a long time.
And he's got one of the highest-rated podcasts
Yeah. He's been doing it since podcast first started.
And he's episodes are like 4 hours long. They're like, he covers everything. The dude's just just knows things. Like he reads constantly. He's just got a wealth of knowledge. It's great.
He has one of his CDs he actually recorded in Houston at Spellbinders, and it is great, man. It is a really, really good one. He talks about how he's like, in Houston there's more strip clubs than gas stations. He goes, when people go over to churches, when people give you directions, they're like, take a right to the men's club, go down to Treasure, take a left.
Yep.
It's true. That's how Houston is. But he's a funny guy, man. He's on point politically. You know, he covers, like you said, he covers all bases. He has a good bit he does on the initial Afghan war, which was really funny. That dude's awesome.
Well, let's get off the history subject
a little bit,
subject into some comedy.
Got into stand-up comedy all of a sudden.
But hey, there's a lot of great ones. You know, like a lot of them that aren't with us anymore, like Mitch Hedberg and stuff. So
Mitch Hedberg, Patrice O'Neill, of course. Greg Giraldo, who I just found incredibly funny. And he's another guy that just didn't hold back against anybody. He passed away way too early as well. There's a lot of them just, they're gone.
Well, we'll have to talk about that in a future episode.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've seen quite a few of them.
Dude, I love stand-up comedy, man. For years, I've been a big fan of stand-up comedy. So I always go to Spellbinders, Improv. There's an open mic night down on the south side of town. I'll take in stand-up comedy as much as possible.
When we didn't have kids, we saw a lot more of it. But tonight we're going to talk about ghost stories.
Yes.
And they're not quite as funny, but you know. So what did you bring to the table? You got any good ghost stories?
Well, one thing I was going to bring up is, I know the last podcast talked a little bit about South Louisiana and just culture down there, and it's been around for a long time. Just the ghost stories tied to different plantation homes. You know, there's a lot of really, really old, beautiful plantation homes in South Louisiana, and just about all of them are haunted to one extent or another. Because on all these plantations, a lot of atrocities happened back in the day with slavery and everything. And there were accidents. People died at young ages back then. Mm-hmm. A lot. You know, my hometown. There's the Shadows on the Tesh is the name of the main plantation home down there, and there was a boy that fell off the balcony of the second floor one time and died, and they say his ghost haunts that place. There's a whole, if you ever get a chance to visit plantation homes in South Louisiana, definitely, you know, take a minute, you know, run down, whether it be Myrtle Plantation or Oak Alley or Shadows on the Tesh or Ponchatoula. There's some really, really beautiful homes with some great stories and great history behind them.
I think we're going to hit up the Myrtles and couple weeks here.
Okay, and the Myrtles, actually, I got right here, Myrtle Grove Plantation. They have a specter in the person of a little old French lady who wears a green bonnet and tiptoes around the rooms at night, which look for her. And there's several other ghost stories that I've heard from that area too.
Yeah, I think probably the closest I ever got, well, I've been in situations, like I told you about my haunted apartment. Yep. Stuff, but so this is actually in New Orleans. So my wife, the first time I had ever been to New Orleans was probably about 10 years ago, 10 or 11 years ago. My wife went to LSU for a year or so, and they, you know, she was in New Orleans a lot. So she was like, you know, we got to go. So, but she always books hotels and stuff through like Priceline. So we drive to New Orleans, park the car, get out, and we stayed at the Bourbon Orleans Hotel. And basically, got in, dropped our bags, hit the street.
We get a drink.
Got wasted for like 3 days. It was for a weekend, so we got there on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So anyway, on this night, we were, you know, we went to bed, we got back, it was like 4 a.m, passed out, and it was just like so wasted. But then kept getting woke up by, there's kids playing in the hallway, and you hear them like laughing and running and playing. You go open the door and look outside, and there's nothing there. And just like, they're being loud, and I'm trying to sleep, and finally I'm just like, I'm fixing to call the front desk and stuff, and then it kind of quiets down. So I'm like, woke up the next day, we went home, no, didn't think about it at all. And then like a couple of months later, few months later, I was watching one of those like Haunted America shows, and they pointed, they're like, oh, when we let's move over to New Orleans, and one of the segments was talking about the Bourbon New Orleans Hotel.
It's my room.
They're like guests who stay on the fourth floor experience what sounds like children playing in the hallway, and you know, in the middle of the night and stuff. I'm like, wow.
So it was our room number again.
Yeah, so like, well, checked it. We were on the floor and everything. It was like, that's the hallway that we're, you know, it's like, it's cool, you know, so.
That is very cool. It's a great story, man.
So I didn't actually see anything, but, you know, we've stayed there since.
Right.
So I just like, want to check it out.
I want to see what else happens.
But there's quite a bit. My buddy Chris from Dudes and Beer. So, like, he shows up a lot in my conversations. So we met in junior year of high school. And the reason we're such good friends is we have a lot in common. Similar to, like, you and I. Like,
right.
We sat down and started talking and just, like, damn, we like everything the same.
Right.
For a long time, because he's in audio video, he worked for Lone Star Spirits, which is the paranormal group that does investigations here locally in around Texas, but mostly based in Houston, going mm-hmm. to haunted, like purportedly haunted places and investigating them out and stuff. So he's actually seen quite a bit of cool stuff running video for those guys.
Right.
You know, setting up investigations, so to speak. And I don't know if he's ever done seances and stuff, but you know, pretty cool.
It is cool. It is very cool, man. Yeah, I almost broke out the Ouija board a couple weeks ago just to see what would happen. A friend of mine was asking if it really worked. I was like, yeah, from what I can see, I'm a believer, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Which I need to break that out. I haven't pulled it out in a long time. Have you ever used a Ouija board?
I've never done any kind of divination. That's one of those kind of holdovers from my religious upbringing. It's mm-hmm. like somewhat scary in that, like, you know, if it doesn't work, then you're wasting your time. If it does work, you're inviting something in that's maybe you don't want to mess with.
Well, you know.
So I'm kind of like, it's a win-win for me to just leave that alone.
My cousin and I used to do them a lot. And I remember this one day, we were on it, and my dad passed away when I was 9. And I was probably about 12 or 13 when we were on it. And this thing was saying that it was my dad. And, you know, I did research afterwards just to see some of the things that happened, you know, why. And first, it misspelled my dad's name, which, you know, that's possible, you know, but reading later on, so that's one of the signs that it's not the person you're actually talking to, that it's something bad that's happening. And we kept going, asking questions and everything, and it's like, it got angry all of a sudden. And this is no lie, I mean, all of a sudden, it started spinning real fast, and it wouldn't stop on anything anymore. And all of a sudden, it started stopping just on random letters, and then it went off the board.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, and it scared the hell out of me and my cousin, and we stuck it up in the cabinet. I'll never forget, we put it up in the cabinet above the dryer in his mom's laundry room. And the next, probably a few hours later, we heard a noise, and we went, it had fell out, the cabinet door was open, and it had fell out, and it was laying on top of the dryer, which, one, we hadn't put it in any way that, you know, it would have slipped. Two, it's not heavy enough to push the door open of the cabinet, but mm-hmm. that kind of freaked us out a little bit.
Yeah, I think it would.
But we didn't. We kept using it anyway. You know, it didn't stop us from getting on it and everything. But it, those are pretty cool, man. They you see some stuff.
See, I think it's weird how, like, because So I've told you about this podcast I listen to called Lore.
Yeah.
So one of the other ones that I have picked up, there's one that does like Mysteries Abound is what it is. Is it Mysteries Abound? I don't know. I'll look for it and I'll link to it. But somebody was pointing out how this one episode of this one show, which I will find for you and tell you what it is so you can listen in, was talking about Harry Houdini and this one medium that they were kind of rivals. So essentially, divination kind of rose as sort of not as a fad, but what could be called a fad shortly after World War One, because mm-hmm. so many people died in World War One that
people were trying to
prove the existence of the other side, and they were kind of leaving. They call World War One the death of Christendom. essentially all of the countries, for all the primary players, were ostensibly Christian nations, and they weren't fighting over religion. They were fighting over politics, and shit, most of the world leaders were cousins, you know. So it was really, you know, the death toll was so high, so many people died, and you know, people were trying to contact. And then what they used to do, and it's called automatic writing, and they would create the planchette, and then they'd write the letters on a piece of paper.
Yeah,
and it was the William Fold, I believe, that created the board. And it was sold as a parlor game. It was kind of capitalizing on these people's grief. And then you'd have mediums come out and do automatic writing, where they'd go into trances and they'd write stuff.
Right, yeah, right.
And Harry Houdini, who was very, very close with his mother, he was basically probably one of the most famous people in the world, Harry Houdini was. But he had been very close with his mother and had basically a bounty on any sort of real magic. If it could be proven, if he could not disprove it, but even like he would go out and he would disprove mediums and different people as charlatans, as fakers and stuff, and he'd expose them and in their careers. But apparently there was this one woman that he couldn't take down.
Really?
And they were rivals, because like he couldn't take her down. He could maybe, she would do something, and he would be able to match it. He was like, I could do this, but he was like five times as strong and extremely well practiced in sleight of hand and all this stuff, and she wasn't. So like, it could be duplicated, but it wasn't. Like, she shouldn't be able to do it.
Right.
But he made a career out of debunking a lot of this stuff with the Ouija boards and stuff, and yet it stuck around.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I definitely believe there's something to it, especially maybe not in every case, but in a lot of cases, you know, that even if that thing is you controlling it, there's that side of yourself that's trying to get through.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you're just talking to a bit of yourself, subconscious, but it's valid.
Right. But it's like I told you, you know, the way I see the existence of a place where ghosts exist with us is a parallel realm, which coexists within our own reality.
Right.
So how hard would it be for something just to reach over and say, let me push this over here real quick? You know, that's one of the reasons why I believe that it's very possible, you know.
Well, I know some people that know, you know, that have experienced their own stuff. I met my wife at a bar called the Stag's Head Pub over off of basically Richmond and Greenbrier.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And the bar, okay, so the Stag's Head Pub opened in like 2002, I think. 2001, the owner lost the alehouse. The alehouse was an English pub that was at the corner of West Alabama and Kirby. And it had been an old farmhouse. It had been there, it was like 100 and something years old. And it had been in the, since it was a farmhouse, kind of the River Oaks area was kind of like the boondocks to downtown when it was built. But it was a farmhouse, and it was a speakeasy, like during Prohibition. Uh-huh. It was several other things. It was like a restaurant. They said it was a brothel, but there's like no proof that it was. But it was a strip club and, you know, different things. And finally, it was an English pub. And it was an English pub when I knew it. But it was also reportedly one of the more haunted places in Houston. And I used to go there and drink, you know, with friends and hang out. And everybody talked about it. I mean, it was not an open secret. It was an open... You know, everybody talked
legend,
about
everybody
the
knew about it.
All the employees had some sort of, you know, run-in with the activity. There was three different ghosts that they say was there. There was one named Maggie. There was one that looked like a sea captain, and then there was another one called the Servant that didn't really have a name. But there was three ghosts, and basically the sea captain would like sexually harass the female bartenders and stuff, and, like pinch them and throw stuff at them. But chairs would get moved, lights would change, people would, like, they had an upstairs and a downstairs, So the bartender would clean up and put the chairs on the tables and then go downstairs and then come back up and all the tables would be down. Or vice versa, right, and stuff like that. But everybody had a story. Unfortunately, the land got... Holiday, the owner, Michael Holiday, lost a lawsuit. He owned the land that the alehouse sat on, but apparently whoever sold him the alehouse should not have sold him the land that it sat on. And the land was actually owned by the people who owned the Borders books, which is now gone. Uh-huh. They're bankrupt and gone. The Borders books tore down this historical old home so that they could have 12 parking spaces.
Jesus.
Yeah, they're selling history books and ghost stories inside. They've got a real haunted historical monument in their parking lot, and they tear it down to make 12 spaces. And then they go bankrupt, so good on them.
But, they should take that away for a short time.
Yeah. But anyway, it got torn down in 2001. But when I used to work event promotion for the bars, we were doing an event at the alehouse, and we had stuff going on downstairs in the patio and, you know, in... around the bar. We were using the upstairs as a staging area, so all of our extra lights and boxes and road cases and, you know, they used to have live music there. I mean, it was a nice big open bar. So I go on my break to grab something to eat, so I go upstairs. I, you know, take my food, take my smokes, I go upstairs, and my boss is up there, and she's up there with a couple other people, and so she's talking with people, and she's, you know, doing this and that. And I finish my snack. I finish my smoke. She and I chat for a few minutes, and I'm like, well, got to get back. She's like, oh, you're not going anywhere. And I was like,
yeah, yeah.
what am I supposed to be doing? She's like, you're staying up here with me until somebody comes up. I was like, okay. Well, like, and in my head, I'm kind of like, why are you telling me I have to stay up here with you? Like, what's going on? This is weird. And she's not, like, she's not the kind of person that was, you know, she was very popular girl and charismatic and, you know, it's like, she was very serious and like, you are staying here and we never talked about anything. Okay. I'm sort of like, lit another smoke and I'm like, so, she goes, you know this place is haunted, right? I was like, I've heard. She goes, you know the ghost primarily picks on girls, right? I was like, yeah. She's like, every time I'm alone in a room in this place, the ghost pinches my ass. And I was like, so I cannot be alone in any room by myself in this building. So you're staying up here with me till somebody else comes up, and then you can go back downstairs. And I'm like, all right.
That was so crazy, man.
But yeah, I know Chris did some stuff with Lone Star Spirits there. They filmed all kinds of crazy stuff.
Okay.
So talk to him sometime. Maybe he'll post up in the comments about some of the stuff he saw.
There was a Houston restaurant I remember hearing about that used to be very, very haunted.
There's the Spaghetti Warehouse.
That's one. It. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
And
is this still open?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Right. I've eaten there. I've heard the story in there. I was going to do that, but I ran across, you know, the Spaghetti Warehouse is above, Spaghetti Warehouse is its own building, and it's been there for a while. There's another area that, like, there's a ballroom that's nearby that's also purportedly haunted, but... All of those buildings, you know, have had quite a bit of history.
Oh, yeah, they've been around for a long time. I said this has been around for a long time. Yeah.
The oldest bar, I think, in Texas, actually, especially, it is certainly in Houston, is a place called La Carafe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reportedly haunted as well. And it's in Market Square, and it's like a really thin little, I mean, the whole bar is probably as wide as this room that we're in, with the bar included.
Right.
And, if you go down to Market Square, you can see it. It's like kind of, it's between two other buildings and it kind of leans to one side the way old buildings should if they don't get torn down like Houston likes to do. But it's been there for 100 years easily. And the owner has all kinds of, it should be haunted. If it's not, it should be. But the owner has all kinds of really cool old vintage pictures, like paintings, or not paintings, but photographs and news clippings from stuff that happened decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's cash only bar. They don't use electric light. It's all candles, you know. And it's just a, I mean, it's kind of like a gothic dive bar, really. Like, I mean, it's got regulars. I mean, it's a lively atmosphere, but they just, right. you know, they just do kick it old school, so to speak.
Okay.
But, I used to know, I used to know everybody that worked at every bar back when I used to do the event promotions mm-hmm. in the bars, but I used to know somebody who worked at La Carafe that would say, like, they would lock up and they'd go get in their car and they'd look up and they'd see somebody standing in the upstairs window and be like, shit, I trapped a customer. Like, I locked up with a customer still inside, so he'd go open back up and go search the building and nobody there. And,
yeah, so that'd be a wild feeling, man.
You know, at 2 in the morning, that's scary shit right there.
No shit. I don't know if I'd go back in. They'd like, be stuck there in the morning.
Like, yeah, you can get out in the morning. actually, when I was looking for more stuff on La Carafe, because I've drank at La Carafe, I've sat on the patio, I love the place. It's a good place to go have a beer. And I knew that it was, haunted, maybe, because I'd heard some stories, but I actually ran across this really cool long article. It's the website is called storiesforghosts.com, and if you do a Google search for like La Carafe haunted or something, mm-hmm. that's where I found it. What's pretty neat is there's a local blogger who's doing something similar to what we're doing,
okay.
writing stories about, you know. She's doing movie reviews and ghost stories cool. and all kinds of, you know, very similar to what we're doing. She's her stuff looks a lot more serious and professional than ours does.
Because that's why. We're guys.
Yeah, we're a little bit more, we're a little bit more comical, you know, surrounded by toys and cartoons here.
Nothing is serious.
But now check out, I mean, she had some good stuff on different locations okay. in
around
Houston.
I'll definitely check it out, man.
So, and I'm gonna dig a little deeper into her website and see if she might want to answer some questions sometime in the future. So, but yeah, that's La Carafe. Trying to think of anything else local that I've experienced. There's a lot of stuff here.
Right. Yeah. There's a ton of stuff. Right. Like I said, back home in Louisiana too. I think I've spoken already about the one house where me and my uncle had done air conditioning work at. It was his home. It was reportedly been haunted for many years by some folks that had been killed in the house. And it had been through a whole bunch of owners, and the current owner was trying to sell it one more time. It was on the market, and they had us go over to work on the air conditioner because it had broken down. We had to change the evaporator coil up top in the attic. And my uncle was up in the attic, and he sent me down to grab some tools. And right before I went down, all of a sudden, there was like a real cool breeze that came through. You know, I felt it. I figured he felt it, but I didn't really take note of it. I just went downstairs. And whenever I went to walk back in the house, he was down from the attic and running out the door. And he never went back to that house again. And from what he told me is, you know, that coolness kind of continued. And all of a sudden, he had this chill come all the way up his spine. And it scared the hell out of him, man. Something happened to him up there, and he never. What's funny is he wouldn't go in attics after that.
Oh wow!
Yeah, he had me and my cousin Mark, you know, work on the stuff in the attics, or we had another guy working for us named Booksack, and we'd be the ones going in the attic, and he just didn't want to bother with him, man. This scared, but we never went back to that house. Never finished the job.
Wow,
that was a pretty creepy one. That one, like I said, I felt it, but I didn't really take note of it because I was going outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't. I was a young guy. I was, you know, 14, 15 years old. I didn't think a big deal of it, but he. He got the full effect of it. He was ready to go.
What's your take on, like, haunted objects, like dolls and, you know, that's another thing I ran across last night is, you know, if you do a quick eBay search for haunted, you'll find dolls and objects and stuff that are people are selling as haunted that have bids on them. They'll say, like, this doll is haunted. It came out of this, you know, whatever. It makes, no, you know, weird sounds. And people are actually trying to buy these items, like there's bids on them, so
I don't know if I believe in that very much, to be honest with you, because to me the spirit or the soul of somebody, you know, it has to go into something that is more animated than that, you know. I believe in possession of a person, but not an inanimate object.
Well, you've heard like the story of Robert, the doll in Florida.
Yes, I have read that one,
and that is I've read so many different. not variations, but so many takes on that, that it all comes back around to, like, that is frightening. And it's like that.
But I forgot like all his, about that. I do his, remember reading about
his,
that.
The boy's maid was voodoo, or she was, I don't know if she was a voodoo, but she was certainly a practitioner of that.
The black arts.
The black arts. And she cursed that doll.
Yeah, no, now that you mentioned that, so, I remember reading that. I would have to say that I could see where that could happen, because I remember that that is some creepy shit, man. That was in your chills. I remember reading about that.
Yeah. So for the listeners who haven't heard, it's a somewhat long story, but essentially what it is there was a really rich family in Florida. I can't remember exactly the city, but they hired a maid to take care of their little boy, and their little boy was named Robert. And the maid, or not the maid, the parents gave the boy a doll, and it was just a cotton doll. And he loved the doll, and he talked to the doll, and they were inseparable, like kids and dolls are. But at some point, the doll started talking back, and the mother would see the doll. Like, the mother would put the doll away, and when nobody else was at home, the doll would be in certain places where right. It shouldn't be. They would see it staring out the windows whenever they came home, and it would make noise, and it would make threats, and they would hear Robert, the boy, arguing with Robert, the doll, and there would be a different voice on the other side of the door. So they got rid of that maid, first of all, because I believe they found out that the maid had had ties to voodoo or some other sort of island religion that didn't approve of, obviously, because she's commanding the dolls to come to life. But Robert, the boy, they got rid of the doll. Robert, the boy, grew up and married and then moved back into the house, was reunited with Robert, the doll. Robert, the doll, either threatened or had something to do with the death of his wife.
Right.
And then subsequent owners of the home have encountered Robert and had Robert, like,
disposed of,
haven't had Robert threaten them in some way or another.
But always coming back.
And coming back. So now he's in a museum and he's locked in a box that he can't get out of. But it's one of those where you read a ghost story and then you go back and you're like, well, here's what the skeptics think. It's this, that. There's nothing.
What can you do to it?
So I do believe there can be haunted items. I think it's kind of funny, some of the stuff that, you know, and a lot of the stuff that you and I collect. I mean, not a lot of stuff in here is true vintage, but, you know, I got that Ouija board at an estate sale.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. What
souls may have come through there?
Who's been talking to whom? It may have just been a bunch of kids playing a parlor game and there was nothing. It could have been, you know, the stepmother's secret thing, because there was also a lot of strange dolls in
that
house.
Well, you know, that goes back to Hellblazer with the electric chair from San Quentin. Imagine the souls that have gone through those things.
Right.
You know, an object like that, just, good Lord, man. Just the spirituality behind that. And just
if you think that a home...
bad vibe and just, whoo, man.
That if a home can absorb an energy or whatever, you know, an object can, especially, you know, when you have things like fetishes, and you talked about Grigri and, you know, voodoo dolls and stuff that you're actively placing an energy into or whatever.
Right.
You know.
Well, we were talking about the atrocities that happened with slaves back, you know, today, and there was the movie Tales from the Hood,
mm-hmm.
which there was the man that moved into the plantation home, and there's a big painting there of a woman who was one of the slaves there with a bunch of dolls. And the way the legend went in the movie was she made those dolls for the souls of slaves that had died so that they could, you know, still exist. And those dolls started popping out of that picture going after that man. And that was a crazy one, bro. That reminded me a lot of the robber story. You know, the dolls would hop down and all of a sudden they'd be sitting in a spot of the room where they shouldn't be. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was pretty wicked. That was a creepy story. That could have been a whole movie by itself, but I'm also a big Puppet Master fan, so very similar there.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. I just don't. I think it's weird how, you know, Chris and I talked about it in the Krampus episode, where a lot of, you know, like, I think the whole Krampus concept is cool. Like, yeah. You know, it's history. It's lore. It's mythology. It's, you know, but there are people out there who will actively embrace a figure like Krampus because Krampus himself is the opposite of the good.
Yeah, they want to be the anti.
They want to be the adversary. And same thing like we talked about in Voodoo, is Voodoo was kind of a dark mirror to Catholicism in a lot of places.
Yep.
You know, in some places it merged and became its own, you know, I don't want to say entity, but its own thing. But in other places, you know, the serpent in the Bible is the devil,
mm-hmm.
and the voodoos worship snakes.
Right.
So you're like, you know, an active antithesis to a norm, so yep. to speak. I don't think I would ever want to bid on something that was sold as haunted. Because first of all, if the people are lying, then that's stupid. You just spent $200 on a damn doll. But if they're not lying,
you're bringing that into your home.
And what we were talking about, Seinfeld earlier, the little Mr. Jingles.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the consignments I once had was, it's going back to World War II, but it was a grave marker from a Japanese soldier that was killed in Guadalcanal, that this man took the Japanese grave marker home with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't take it to my house. I told the lady, I'll take pictures here. You can leave it here. I said, but I'm going to tell you right now, I have no interest in selling this for you. I said, you want me to try to find the family that it belongs to? I'll get it interpreted, find out who it was for. I said, but I'm not selling this. Because there's no way I was going to bring that negative energy to me.
There was a lot of trophy collecting from World War II. There was obviously a lot of bad blood on all sides,
yep.
but it happened more in the Pacific Theater where they'd bring home skulls,
ears, and all kinds of stuff. Teeth.
My grandfather had a bayonet, and he was a tank driver, and he was in Saipan and some other places in the Pacific Theater, but he saw the most action in Saipan. But he said the only one that he ever knew that he actively killed, he rolled his tank over, and the dude was trying to run up on his tank with grenades. Like, he had anti-tank stuff, and he turned the tank and rolled him up in the treads. And he had his bayonet, and he had a couple of other things that he took off him as trophies. But he said he always felt, because one of them was like a handkerchief, but it had some like Japanese characters on it. And it was essentially his, like, ID.
Okay.
And he's like, I didn't realize that that's what it was, because all of... And of course, as we call it now, racist. But, you know, drinking beer, drinking Schlitz on the patio in his old man coveralls. And all them nips out, all that stuff with all the scraggly lines
on
it.
We didn't know what it meant.
And, you know, whatever, you know. He's like, but, you know, maybe... should have probably left that on him, you know, like, yeah. had that, you know, that respect for the dead, you know, that,
right.
that, you know, he didn't, that bayonet had a tank tread dent in it.
Really?
Yeah. So he's like, that's mine. That sat right on his, in his office. He had a special place okay. for that, you know.
Because that grave marker was just, like, I got the name, I know the name of the soldier, I know, you know, date he was born, date he died, everything. And I'm, like I said, I'm thinking about just going, because I know there's a veterans group in the Asian part of town, over off of Bellway 8.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about going over there and just seeing, you know, if they have any kind of records where I could get this to this guy's family, man, you know, just to put it where it's supposed to be. With good conscience, I could not keep
it. Would the dude have to sell it to the family? Like, what's he want to sell it for?
No, it was the lady got it from her dad. Her dad was the one that brought it home. And so she has a whole bunch of stuff. I got a ton of actual munitions that he brought back from Guadalcanal. I got half of a helicopter blade.
Oh, wow.
No, I'm sorry, a Japanese Zero plane. I got half of a blade from the propeller of one of those. All kinds of stuff. He actually just cut it with a hacksaw, which sucks because I can't prove where it's from. You know, it has the shape and it has the stripe coming down it, but, you know, it's just a 3-foot section of it. And she also had this grave marker that he brought back with him.
Mm.
And she's just, she's sitting there with it, just wanted to get rid of a whole bunch of it. But yeah, I got tons of rounds from M1 carbine and the clips and the box that it originally got shipped in.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Strange as it is, I don't know why somebody would do this, but my brother-in-law, they have a neighbor, I mean, they just recently moved, but they have a neighbor that lived next door, never talked to him, never said anything, you know, just, Colin goes outside one day, and there's stuff sitting out there for heavy trash, and there's just boxes and stuff, and one of the boxes fell over, and all these helmets from World War I fell out. Yeah, and Colin's like, are you throwing this away? And he's like, oh, yeah, you can have whatever you want. And like, two boxes were, like, old records, like Victor Victrola records.
Yeah, 78s.
You know, and helmets and all kinds of other shit from World War I. I've got one of them in my closet. I got one of them. He gave them one for Christmas. The one he kept has, like, in, I don't think it's chalk, but it's some sort of white writing. It says Argonne Forest, 1917.
This is very cool.
You know, man. And it's still got the liner and everything in there. It was the dude's, like, freaking grandfather or father. See,
holding
or something.
Stuff like that, just holding it, it's something that's part of history like that, just gives me chills sometimes.
Oh, yeah. You know, and most of the ghosts, you know, it's like, you know, we're hitting the end of the episode here, but I have an ex-girlfriend, her dad was in the Navy, and I don't remember the name of the ship, but apparently this one ship, that if you go on this ship, everybody who ever serves on this ship has the same dream. And there was apparently two guys, one of them fell overboard and another dude jumped out to save them. And if you serve on this, and they both died, and if you serve on this ship, you have the dream that you're one of the two.
Really?
And you wake up.
That's pretty crazy.
And you've had that dream and you've drowned off that boat. And he had it, and everybody on the bit, you know, like, everybody had it. It's like, but it just affects every single person.
Right.
Like, wow.
That is crazy. You know, just real quick before we ended, one piece that I remember finding, I was getting a backroom tour of a museum in my hometown with my cousin Mark. And he was one of the volunteers there, did a lot of work with the museum. And we're going through a bunch of the stuff they hadn't been through yet, so that had been donated. And I find this bugle on one of the shelves, and I clean it up a little bit to where I could read it. And there was a regiment, there was our hometown, there was a date, and there was a regiment number on it. So I looked it up a little bit and did some research, you know, come to find out, and now think about this, was in my hand. This bugle was used by the local regiment from New Iberia, Louisiana, during the Civil War, when they were in Florida, going through the Everglades, the swamps. And what it is, the bugle guy would lead. And the rest of the regiment, it was nighttime, they would follow that bugle sign. And he's the one that would lead them out of the swamps and everything with the bugle that I had in my hand.
Wow.
That was just cool as hell to behold, that is, man.
That is incredible. Like, I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
We talked earlier, you know, if I ever get the Oprah money and I'd buy me an apartment in NOLA. Those old, you know, old armor.
History, you know, it's history in your hand.
You know, and that's one of those things we talk about, like comic books. Because, you know, there's a certain point at which you're playing collectible, but whenever you come back to a certain age, you're holding Americana.
Yeah.
You know, you're holding history.
But they'll never exist again.
You know,
if
stuff
it gets destroyed.
Yeah. Well, all those kids carried them around in their back pockets, and it was designed to be destroyed. It was printed on shitty paper.
Right.
And,
like newspapers is what it essentially was.
And, you know, so you only have a few, couple hundred, a few that ended up in a drawer just in under the right circumstances that didn't deteriorate.
Right.
And it's rare. So that's the kind of stuff that, you know, I'll get into, because as I get a little bit older and I'm looking at, you know, stuff I'm going to leave for my daughters and stuff that they're going to be like, man, Dad collected comics. I'd be like, did he collect, like, Dark Horse? No, not so much. but anyway, man, that's a whole other subject. Maybe we need to get Bob in.
Yeah, we need to get some of the NOA guys on the show to,
you know,
come
talk about
books.
Talk about some books. But anyway, man, check out storiesforghosts.com. I know it's kind of a free plug, but I was impressed in the couple
I'll
articles.
I'll definitely check it out for sure.
And I'm gonna hit her up and say, hey, you know, let her know that we're giving her a shout out on the show, even though this episode drops on 123, so, you know, no.
Better have fun for Christmas first.
Yeah. We are recording this in a little bit in advance, guys. We've got a lot of vacation coming up in January, so we didn't want to miss any episodes. So we got together and recorded a couple in advance. So today is either sometime before or sometime after 123. You'll be listening to this episode on 123. And if you're listening to it 5 years from now, it landed on 123.17. So if you get a little confused by some of our references, then that's why. But if you ever have any questions, hit us up.
Yes.
Send us an email. Like us on Facebook.
Hit us on Twitter. Easy to find.
Again, I always ask, just push all the buttons and let us know what you think. And in the meantime, keep it scary.
Later, fellas.